this point, we're going to hear item two and take our lunch break. So I invite to the panel desk.
Our bio break.
I'm sorry. Well, in any event, no break, lunch or otherwise, until after presentation of item two. Welcome, Judge Blake. Welcome, Judge Perlis.
Well, good afternoon. Thank you, Chief, and thank all of you for giving us this time. We are here to provide a report and an overview of the work of the California Tribal Court State Court Forum. I am Dennis Perlis. I sit on the 2nd Appellate District, Division 7 in Los Angeles. And I'm co-chair of the forum. To my immediate right is Judge Richard Blake, who is the chief judge of the Hoopa Valley Tribal Court, the Smith River Rancheria Tribal Court, and the Redding Rancheria Tribal Court. And further to our right is Jennifer Walter, who is a supervising attorney at the Center for Families, Children, and the Courts, who, along with other members of the center, provides staffing to the forum. The forum was created in May 2010 by Chief Justice Ron George and continued by our current chief. The reason we're here primarily is that in January of this year, we provided a report of our activities to Justice Miller and ENP, and the basic response was twofold. One, gee, we didn't even know you guys existed. And secondly, you're doing a pretty good job here. And remarkably in this time, although it's the last slide that we're going to present, you're doing a pretty good job with grant funding so that you're not taking money from other programs that the state is doing. It would be worthwhile if you explain to the entire Judicial Council what it is that this forum is doing, what the nature of the problem is that caused the forum to be created and continued by our current chief, and what some of the things, the initiatives that you're undertaking to try to deal with the problem. So that's why we're here. We have a short presentation. We have a couple of video vignettes to help illustrate some of the problems, perhaps even generate a little conversation among the members of the council about what they see on the vignettes, and then to talk a little bit about some of the proposals and initiatives and accomplishments of the forum. Judge Blake.
Thank you. Good morning, or good afternoon, I'm sorry. Good afternoon, Chief. Good to see you again. My name is Richard Blake. I am the Chief Judge of the Hoopa Valley Tribal Court, and interestingly enough, I'm also a tribal member of the Hoopa Valley Tribe and a Yurok and of Yurok and Karuk descent. My brief overview of tribal communities, I'm hoping that what I will be able to do is to give you some information on the tribal communities located around the state of California. As you may or may not know, the state of California has the largest number of Native Americans of any state in the United States, with 12% of the total Native population residing here within the state of California. Not all, I mean, and having the lowest land base of tribes, reservations, a majority of those communities are. I mean, tribal members are from other tribes outside of the United States. As you can see, there's currently 109, and that's questioned. It could be as high as 111, but at this point, 109 federally recognized tribes and 78 groups petitioning for federal recognition within the state of California. 720,000 California citizens identify themselves as American Indian or Alaskan Native, and as you can see, the 12% of all American Indians in the Alaska Native population, it resides within the state of California, which again gives the state of California the largest population of Natives in any state in the nation. And as you see, the next one is the tribes can be range in size from 5 tribal members to as large as 5,600 tribal members, which I would believe to be the Yurok tribe in Northern California. My tribe that I come from in Hoopa, as of last Monday, we have 2,400 tribal members, we have the largest land base, 144 square miles of land for the Hoopa Valley Indian Reservation. The tribal court systems that are represented in California currently, the California has 20 tribal court systems throughout the state. Unfortunately, I represent 3 of those by myself, so it doesn't mean that there's 20 tribal judges. It means that there are 20 tribal courts. The numbers of tribal courts has definitely doubled since the inception, even of the tribal state forum. I know that when we began, I believe that there was 11 tribal courts. So you can see that it's doubled, just about doubled in size since 2002. But the inception of the tribal state forum has only been since 2010. The court typically serves 39 tribes. It doesn't necessarily mean that every tribe has their own court system. There are tribes that opted into a collaborative, if you will, of tribal courts, tribes that have made the decision to band together for fund reasons or for the convenience of if they only have one or two cases that they need to have heard at one point, that they could save on the financial responsibility of developing a court system for themselves. The tribal courts have various types of jurisdictions that we exercise. My court in Hoopa has we practice over 70 areas of law, with the exception of adult criminal. The tribal court directory is available at the websites that we have listed here. Additionally, Jenny has developed a very wonderful map, a Google map, of the tribes located within the state of California. And I'm sure she's going to show you. Now this is the speed that the internet works at in Hoopa. I'm real reminded. I could almost draw you a map quicker than it.
It's worth the wait, though. This is a terrific map.
I think it'll be faster at your desktop.
So the areas that are ballooned actually list the different tribal court systems around the state of California, and if you highlight those, it will give you a brief snapshot of each of the tribal court systems in California. Ironically enough, bordering tribal courts operate in maybe 2 jurisdictions. My court in Smith River, we not only deal with the issues in California, but Oregon. And I know that there are tribes down on the Southern California boundaries that deal with both California and Arizona and California and Nevada laws. So the issues get even broader and more complex for those bordering tribal communities.
The situation is, as Richard has just described, there are Indian tribes are sovereign. There are 20 sovereign judicial systems, tribal courts, in the state of California. There's, of course, the state court system, and overlying all of that, we have a federal court system. There are issues of jurisdiction. There are issues of gaps in jurisdiction. There are issues of resources. Paramount are issues of cooperation. Recognizing the problems, recognizing the issues, at least in the macro sense, our former Chief Justice established the forum in May 2010 and is continuing again under the leadership of the current chief. The forum has both state court members and tribal court judge members. The state court members are the chairs, and in one instance the vice chair of the advisory committees to this council that deal in substantive law areas and access to justice that are of concern to the tribal court community. There are superior court judges from a number of the counties where tribal courts work, and there is a representative of both the Attorney General's office and the Governor's office who deal with tribal court and Indian tribe matters. And we have the judges from a number, I think it's 13 at this point, judges from tribal courts across the state. The initial meeting came together, the forum, to discuss how independent judicial systems can effectively function in a way that serves all of our constituents, all of our stakeholders. One of the things that we learned was that, although in no small part because of tribal custom, tribal courts often look different to those of us on the state court side from what we're used to seeing, and the procedures may be somewhat different. Ultimately, the values, that is, assuring access and assuring a fair outcome that's respectful of all the participants, is the same in all of these systems. And so the forum set out to try to identify areas where having at this statewide level leaders from both the tribal courts and the state system come together to talk about problems, working with a devoted staff here at the AOC at the center to address some of the problems. The concern was to respect each other, but to also recognize where we could help each other. And one of the primary goals was to share information. And in that regard, the various information websites that we've created to assist state court judges and staff of state court judges are now widely available to the tribal courts and tribal court judges, so that forms and educational programs that have been posted online can now benefit not only those of us in the state court system but also members of the tribal court system. But I think that perhaps the best way to show you what the nature of the problem is literally to show you what the nature of the problem is. So we have a couple of vignettes.
Officer, excuse me. This man is following me, and that's a violation of a restraining order that I have against him.
That paper is worthless, officer.
It comes from a tribal court, not superior court.
And how do I know that this is a valid order, ma'am?
Well, you could call the court clerk, and they can tell you that it's valid. And also, it has a judge's signature, and then there's the court stamp right there.
Well, I'll have to call in to find out if this is valid. You wait here, ma'am. And, sir, would you please wait over here?
And in that vignette, you see that one of the actresses there is our own Judge Christine Williams. So the interesting thing about that vignette is that I actually had a case like that. I actually had a case, and one of the things that brings us home to me is I issued a protection order in my court in Hoopa, and probably 12 hours of issuing the order, I was at home. I live in a small community, and I heard a knocking at my door a little bit after midnight. I went to the door, opened it up to a lady standing there who I had recognized had been in my court earlier that day. She was severely battered and had informed me that she had taken her order of protection, and it was served upon the batterer, and that the sheriff deputy in our county refused to accept that as a valid order because he did not recognize that order as valid. I assured her that that was a valid order, and although it did not prevent the assault from reoccurring within my community. So the protection order, as you see in the vignette, what the basis of this is that the batter is indicating to the officer that that order is not valid because it is issued by a tribal court. So our question to you is whether or not you felt you feel that that order is valid or if it is not valid.
That's a question.
It's valid.
It's valid. It is valid. And 18 U.S.C. subsection 2265 mandates that states and tribes provides full faith and credit for each other's protective orders, and prior registration of those orders is not required for enforcement, and the officer should enforce that order and give it full faith and credit.
The difficulty, however, is that notwithstanding that those orders are entitled to full faith and credit, not only under federal law but under the family code, if an officer tries to check on her or his computer, unless they see in one of the systems that they're used to looking at that the order has been registered, there's a reluctance to enforce it. Some of that can be dealt with by education, but now, as of July 1 of this year, there's a rule of court which the council adopted, which we at the forum want to take at least some small measure of credit and responsibility for, but ultimately adopted by the council, that allows the superior court, local courts, to adopt at the request of a tribal government, a protocol for the registration by fax or email of a restraining order issued by the tribal court, which deals with some of just the logistics of the problem of getting the order to into a computer system. In addition, the California Courts Protective Order Registry, CCPOR, now includes, I believe, both the state orders and the tribal court orders. So, again, somebody who accesses a law enforcement, who accesses officer, who accesses, is going to be able to see those orders and hopefully be able to provide some measure of enforcement and protection.
And as a result of that, when we did the training with Jenny on the CCPOR, we did see orders in there that were issued out of my court and in that system, so that we were able to verify that those orders were valid and that any law enforcement agency would be able to do so. Before we go on to this next vignette, As I looked around the room, I realized that I had forgot to acknowledge one of my prior co-chairs in the Tribal State Forum, and that's Justice Harry Hull. I wanted to acknowledge him, that Harry was actually a prior co-chair of the forum.
Thank you, Judge Blake. And I was going to make the comment after your presentation that I was a member, and because of the potential for conflict with my voting membership on the council, we felt it was appropriate that I resign. But it's good to see you and Ms. Walter and Justice Perlis again, and I wanted to note that my short time on the forum I found to be very educational and very enjoyable, and such as this vignette demonstrated to me the very important work of the forum. It's one of those experiences in life where we move along, and because we're not exposed to particular subjects or items, all of a sudden your eyes are opened and you realize that there are problems, there are efforts afoot that are very, very worthy. And again, on the difficulty of the restraining order enforceability, I'm pleased to see that we are making some progress on that. Unfortunately, I also had the thought, as you were describing it, that the recognition and enforcement of restraining orders is another unfortunate victim of our financial inability to go forward with CCMS because it would have made the dissemination of that type of information so much easier than even that it is now. But thank you for the acknowledgement. Thank you for the short time I was on the forum. I enjoyed it.
I see from your papers, Mrs. White, that you are seeking a protective order to keep your husband, Mr. White, away from the family home. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor. He's been harassing me.
Mr. White, do you have anything to say?
Yes, Your Honor. I'm a tribal member. She's not. The house is on the reservation. I don't believe this court has any ability to take action against me.
But, Your Honor, he's been harassing me both on and off the reservation.
What? All right. What? Judge
I
you?
Said, Judge Blake, that would be my response, too.
Yeah. The written description I have of the vignette is Judge looks puzzled. All right. But none of us called upon to be the judge is able to continue to look puzzled, or I guess we could continue to look puzzled, but we have to issue a ruling. Does the court have jurisdiction to issue a stay-away order directed to an Indian tribe member from his residence on a tribal land?
I take it this vignette had a state court, state court judge?
Yes, I'm sorry. Yes, that is a state court judge.
That's why he looked so troubled.
Right, that's right. That's right. That's right. Would you issue the order, Judge Rosenberg?
Yes.
You're asking me?
Yes.
Of course.
All right.
After a hearing.
Well, of course, after fairly hearing both sides, we issue the order, right?
And research.
Right, and research. Well,
trial judges don't have time for that.
Does anybody have a different view? Judge what?
Ellsworth.
Judge Ellsworth.
We don't have any jurisdiction over that home.
Yeah, that in fact is the right answer. That a state court does not have jurisdiction over tribal lands. Putting aside criminal court jurisdiction, but yes.
Well, that's the order that Judge Rosenberg was referring to.
Oh, yeah.
and Ira, we would have reversed it.
You know, Senator, I've never seen the volume that says Rosenberg on Native American law.
That's right. When Jenny presented the same vignette in a different forum, with state court judges who deal with domestic violence, there was again a division because these orders are not uncommon, although they are illegal. Which is why, you know, Justice Miller and Justice Hall and I have jobs, right? Because we want to do it. Angela?
Just out of curiosity, sometimes courts will issue orders that people have to stay away from international borders, you know, for some reason, in criminal cases, for example. I mean, could a superior court in an emergency situation issue an order that, you know, provided that that person is in the county at that time and not on the reservation, so he's present in the courtroom, that the person not get within a mile of the border of the reservation?
Ironically enough, I did an exclusion hearing in Hoopa. We had a non-tribal member that was continually violating the laws and ordinances of the Hoopa Valley Indian Reservation. And as the tribal council handed down a directive that once there was a hearing, that the party was to be excluded from residing on being on the Hoopa Valley Indian Reservation. We held the hearing, I issued the order, and he decided that he did not want to abide by that, so he continued to come back to Hoopa. And what I actually did was I drafted the order, we filed it as a foreign judgment that he was not allowed to be on a reservation. The district attorney actually picked that up and put that the judge then put it into the court order that is a term and condition of his release that he is not allowed to be on the Hoopa Valley Indian Reservation. And that once he made the choice to come back a second or third time, then they picked him up and they actually gave him time for the violation.
The problem that remains from the family court vignette, once you recognize that the Superior Court doesn't have jurisdiction to issue the stay-away order, is what do you do? I mean, you have a petitioner before you who, assume for the sake of the hypothetical, has made a factual showing entitling her to a stay-away order as we would normally consider it in state court, but the court is without jurisdiction to give her the primary kind of protection that she needs, which is to allow her to stay in a home and not to be harassed by her Indian tribe member. The tribal court has jurisdiction to issue, I mean, if there is a tribal court on this reservation and if its governing body has extended its sovereignty to include jurisdiction over domestic violence type matters, then that court would have jurisdiction. But it's not at all clear what a Superior Court judge should or could do within the canons of ethics and in order to protect the victim who is before the court. Those are the kinds of problems that the forum is trying to deal with. Some of the problems and some of the solutions are fairly obvious. You try to develop access to the information about the protective orders through a computer system. That's a pretty obvious problem and a pretty obvious answer. What you do here is not nearly as obvious. And those are the kinds of problems that we're working on. We're not going to show, we had two other vignettes, one of which dealt with issues in juvenile court, delinquency, and issues of jurisdiction, although only slightly on point. I commend to you the Supreme Court's recent decision in W.B. Jr. from earlier this month, which dealt about the applicability of ICWA, the Indian Child Welfare Act, to delinquency cases or the lack of applicability of it to delinquency cases. And then we also had a vignette on traffic issues and the question of whether the Superior Court or a tribal court has appropriate jurisdiction over various kinds of traffic offenses, merging into the issue of driving under the influence, which is certainly a traffic offense of sorts, but raises the question of what is civil regulatory versus criminal, which is of importance in terms of the ability of the tribal courts to exercise jurisdiction. In the interest of time, we just leave you with the fact that domestic violence may be the easiest identifiable issue, but there are, in almost every substantive area of the law, including mental health and probate, there are issues of the concurrent, overlapping, and sometimes conflicting jurisdictions. But we want to spend a few more minutes of your time to talk a little bit about the accomplishments other than in the domestic violence area.
Let's quickly get through these so you can have your new slide. There you go.
Okay, in talking about the accomplishments of the forum, first I wanted to, speaking on behalf of the several tribal courts across the state of California, I have to say first off, the first accomplishment is that we're here, that we're all sitting here around this room, and that we're talking about tribal state issues, and that's accomplishment within itself. One that I was in Reno over the weekend at the National Council, and for those of you that know Justice Thorne, Bill Thorne said that he attended school here in California and that he thought this could never happen, but we're all living proof that it does happen and that just a little bit of cooperation goes a long ways. The education opportunities that have occurred since the inception of the Tribal State Forum has been phenomenal for not only the tribes but for the state. Not only are we learning about the state systems, but the state systems are learning about our tribal court systems and how they operate. They may all not look the same. They may not all operate the same, but I'm telling you that our goal is to accomplish the same task that each one of us have set out to do, and that is to make certain that justice is done equally and fairly across the board in our communities. The forum has also gained national attention in several ways. We recently at the ICWA conference located in Blue Lake in Humboldt County shared a symposium or a meeting with the representatives from the state of Washington who are interested in developing a forum such as we have here in California. At the National Council meeting this weekend, I had a gentleman contact me from the Mississippi Band of Choctaw Indians who wants to make such a presentation to the Chief Justice in the state of Mississippi so that that they're able to begin working on issues that are common across the country. My vision was one that we all ended up here, that we are going to be able to talk about these issues in common and that we'd come to some form of resolution. And if my days ended tomorrow, I'd say that we were successful. I'd say that we've accomplished that. There is more to do. There is always more to do. But I am saying that the accomplishments that I have seen thus far, I think, far surpass what I envisioned that they would be at this point.
Looking forward, what the council can anticipate from us, the forum, and working with several of the advisory committees, have prepared a legislative proposal to permit an easier mechanism for enforcement of civil judgments from tribal courts. Now, a civil judgment, a monetary judgment in a lawsuit, for example, is treated in the same manner and under the specific CCP provisions as a judgment from any foreign country. And the proposal we've prepared expands from money judgments to include other types of civil judgments and would create, if ultimately adopted, a procedure that is what I think of as a hybrid between the way that a sister state judgment can be recognized and a foreign judgment is enforced. We're also working toward the legislature in authorizing tribal customary adoptions. That's an adoption under tribal law in which parental rights are not terminated. There's essentially a several-year period in which the legislature has authorized dependency courts to approve those types of adoptions. The Judicial Council has been directed by the legislation to prepare a report on how that's doing, and we anticipate working with the appropriate council folks to make sure that that's done in a timely fashion. Not on our slide, but something that anybody who has either spent time in a dependency court or spent time on an appellate court looking at dependency cases will be, I think, excited to hear. We are working on a program for e-notice in ICWA cases to eliminate the many failed, unsuccessful efforts at having all the right information on the piece of paper that gets sent and then ultimately is the ground for reversal of a dependency case. So we're busy. We hope that these proposals will be coming to the council in the fall.
In addition to that information, one of my other appointments was to the California State Federal Judicial Forum, that being appointed by the Chief Justice. And if you will find in your information the resolution that was adopted on June 1st, 2012. This resolution was adopted again June 1st, 2012, and I am going to, I was so touched by it, I want to read it to you. Whereas the California State Judicial Council is committed to direct and personal communication among judges of the California State, Federal, and Tribal Courts concerning matters of mutual interest and concern. Whereas the State Federal Judicial Council is committed to coordinating with the California Tribal State Court Forum to explore and develop methods to use scarce judicial assets as so as to benefit the three systems and Native American citizens of the state. Whereas the state federal judicial council acknowledges the importance of judicial education as a tool to improve communication, foster understanding, and maximize resources. Be it therefore resolved that the California State Federal Judicial Council, in collaboration with the State Tribal State Court Forum, will identify opportunities to share educational resources and encourage the development of judicial education, programming, and materials on federal Indian law and its impact on federal, state, and tribal courts in order to improve the process and outcomes for Native American citizens throughout the state of California. God bless you guys for doing that. Seriously. Good job.
Finally, if we can, on we hope funding is not completely in place, but we anticipate the planning's in place, but the funding isn't quite yet. There will be a symposium in October in collaboration with the National Judicial College that's hosted by the Shingle Spring Band of Miwok Indians. That is going to be attended by a number of the tribal court judges, members of our forum, and judges from a number of the counties where there are tribal courts, and we're going to be talking in the very first programs are going to be an overview and a primer for people who aren't familiar, and then there's going to be much more sophisticated discussion of some of the issues and potential solutions that we have. We have invited at least a few of the members of the Judicial Council to attend, but I would encourage anybody who on the council who thinks they might be interested in attending and would like more information about the symposium to contact either Richard or me or Jenny Walter here at the center, because we would be delighted to have a real Judicial Council presence at that symposium. With that, if there are questions, the final slide is going to show you where our funding comes from, but if there are questions, we'd be happy to entertain them.
Judge D'Alba.
Thank you, Chief. Justice Perlis, Judge Blake, I just wanted to say that on behalf of the council, I will be attending.
Great.
I've accepted the invitation, and I will be there for the two-day symposium.
Terrific. We're pleased that you will be.
Thank you.
Justice Miller.
I wanted to thank you and commend you for your presentation. And as you indicated at the beginning, when you appeared before E&P at their annual agenda, and I don't want to speak for other E&P members, but I at least did not even know you existed. And I was so impressed with your presentation and the scope of your work and what you do that I felt it was important that you come before the council, and I'm sure all of them are aware of it, but I wanted to make sure that the great work that you do was presented to the council, and since our meetings are open to the public, that it was streamed and broadcast to whomever may be listening. I just feel it's another example of an area of so importance that we have council support, that you have AOC support, and that you continue in your work. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to be here.
Thank you. I just want to say one thing. Judge Blake and I were in New York listening to a symposium on school discipline and expulsion and the connection to that to the road to the juvenile justice system and the road thereafter to the adult criminal justice system. We spent some time, and also tomorrow on the Judicial Council agenda, there'll be a presentation by Justice Huffman, who also joined us at that forum to seek a California summit on the issue. And so the work continues. I look forward to our relationship continuing. Thank you, Justice Perlis, Judge Blake, and Jenny.
Thank you, Chief.
Thank you very much,
Thank
Chief.
You. At this time, we're going to take our 15-minute recess. I'm going to call it at 3:30. We'll be back in session at 3:45. Thank you.